And now, it's time to lace them up. Here's Brett and Steve.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a special edition of the Lace Them Up podcast. I'm Steve Ellsworth. We are talking all things Ottawa Senators today. I grew up in Kanata, 10 minutes away from the Canadian Tire Center, the current Sens Army residence. I have been waiting probably 7 years for playoff hockey because at the time of this recording, the Sens coming off a huge OT win over the Islanders, and it looks like they're still 16 points out of the final playoff spot. So I don't think we'll be getting any playoff hockey before 2025, unfortunately. Hopefully the better times are just around the corner, even though I have been saying that for multiple seasons now. Joining us to talk about how the Sens can turn the tables around and ultimately what they have done this season, both good and bad, is Jack Richardson of the Everyday Sens podcast. Great to have you aboard, man.
Hey, thanks, Elsie. I appreciate it. I'm happy to be here. I'm excited. It's been a long time coming, and our other one is lost in the abyss. So I'm happy that we get to re-record here. This is good.
Yeah. So for added context, we did record in the off season, the day before Vladimir Tarasenko signed with the Ottawa Senators. He is since no longer with the Ottawa Senators because he's been traded to the Florida Panthers, and we will talk about that in this edition. So the audience doesn't know your backstory, but tell everyone how you know about New Jersey Devils superstar Jack Hughes.
Yeah, so he's the same age as me, and excuse me, despite my, you know, what I'm doing now, I was an okay hockey player when I was a teenager. I played on some pretty good teams, and we were at a tournament and we got to play against Jack Hughes. So it was pretty cool. I mean, obviously at the time it wasn't that cool because he was much better than everyone and he beat us, but it was still, I mean, now it's cool to be able to talk about it. I played against Jack Hughes, one of the superstars in the NHL. Yeah, it's pretty neat. Like not many people can say that.
Now, was it abundantly clear that, yeah, this guy might be playing in the pros someday and I'll be watching him on my TV screen?
Yeah, what's crazy is there's guys who I played with. Like one of my best friends, it was the best player I ever saw. Like he was head and shoulders above everyone else and how good he was. And Hughes was just that much better than him. So it just kind of puts in perspective how good these players are. Like another New Jersey guy who I actually played against more because he was in Ottawa is Graham Clark. He's a prospect for them. Third round pick in 2019. And, you know, you don't think much of a third round pick or a fourth round pick, but this guy, I don't know him very well personally. He scored 50 goals in 30 games in my minor bantam year.
Damn.
I'll never forget it. He got the 50th goal against us, and it was insane. And, you know, he scored at will. He's a great player, third-round pick in that draft with Hughes, but it just goes to show, like, how good these players are when they get picked that high because he was one of those guys, again, head and shoulders above everyone. But he was picked in the third round. So it just kind of goes to show how skilled these players are and how good they are. Yeah. And it was pretty cool. Like you could just notice right away, like the skating at every level you climb, when you're that young, you can even tell like how fast paced it is. And, they were pretty special.
Also similar to Graham Clark, who played for the Ottawa 67s, Jack Quinn played for the 67s, top 10 pick of the Buffalo Sabres. And, didn't get off to the best start because he started the season on injured reserve, but, you know, a very talented young player in his own right. And my understanding is you played against Jack Quinn for a bit too.
That's correct. Yeah. So he's kind of a good story because he kept climbing. He was never one of those, you know, AAA guys his whole life. Like he never played the top level until his OHL draft year. And then he lit up the league. And before that, when we were younger, so we maybe, I want to say it was 10, 11, 12 years old around then. Before hockey was super serious, we were on the spring hockey team. So it's basically, for those who aren't aware of the spring hockey, and it might have changed, but it's basically you just get to make teams for a couple tournaments, and then it's basically just a way to keep your legs going. But anyway, I was on this team called the Ottawa Wild, we were very bad, like very bad. The reason spring hockey is interesting is because everyone can play it. Like there's no levels. It's just straight up spring hockey. And you go to these tournaments and stuff. So we had a very bad team. And to tell you how bad it was, I was the best player on it. I don't think that's me being cocky. We were just not a good team.
I was a house league goaltender that was basically the third stringer on my hockey team for a year. And I think I spent more times timekeeping in the timekeeper's box than playing hockey or even practicing with the team, which I was okay with. But to put into perspective, you still played in a lot higher levels than I did, certainly.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So, but at the time, I think I was playing competitive B. So I think it was like the lowest competitive level, which is still like a pretty good level. Anyway, at the time, another guy was also playing at the same level, and that's Jack Quinn. So the beauty of these spring teams is you can come in for one tournament and play for a team, and then you can just go off and you don't have to be a part of the team anymore. So that's what he did. He came to our team for one tournament. I don't remember, I don't think we won any games, but he was on my line. So I got to play on Jack Quinn's line for a tournament, which was pretty cool. I mean, at the time I was just happy having, you know, a good player to play with. You don't think that he's going to go and be an eighth overall pick in one of the best drafts in recent history. But yeah, he's a great story as well. And unfortunately he hasn't been able to be healthy this year, but I think he's a great piece of that Sabres team going forward. It's pretty cool. He's an Ottawa legend.
Speaking of great stories with a lot of potential, this year's Ottawa Senators at the start of the year, I had a lot of hype for this team, and their power play took a step back. Their penalty kill has been one of the worst in Sens history. I have to ask, as a guy who follows this team just as much as you do, what the heck happened, man?
Oh, I'll be honest. When we were planning to record this, I was thinking about what I was going to say. Yeah. And I still don't know, because the coaching, like, a lot has happened. A lot's happened. You know, even, I mean, for background for people listening, like, you and I worked together up until Christmas, pretty much, and New Year's. And yeah. You know, since then, even, like, think of how much has changed, right? Like, DJ Smith was fired, I think, on the 18th of December. And so I wasn't really around for all this Jacques Martin hockey. And, like, they look like a brand new team. They do. I think, you know, the detail, like, their sticks are more active. They're dominating play for stretches at even strength offensively and defensively. But they just can't get out of their own way sometimes. I think they're, you know, as a – goaltending's the issue, and I think that's number one concern. But you know, you look around the league and they're not the only team. Like, you look at New Jersey, that's a great hockey team that just does not have good goaltending. And,
yep, can't buy a save.
You know, the Edmonton Oilers probably win, you know, are I would argue they could have won a cup if they had good goaltending in the past two seasons, right, in the playoffs. Yep. And that's another team. The Toronto, like, every good team in the NHL has stellar goaltending, and every team that loses in the playoffs, you can chalk it up to getting outplayed by their goalie. So my point being, I think that's the main issue. I kind of liked the way Steos approached the deadline, in the sense that he's just getting a sense of what the league thinks of his players. And in those post deadline press conferences, really sounded like he just got a sense that they have good players on their roster. And I agree, they do. They have a lot of good pieces. You know, you mentioned today they play the Islanders. I was watching that. I only caught the second period, but I'm looking at Tim Stützle just absolutely take over the game, and he's 22 years old. Yep. You know, they've got him, Brady Tkachuk, I didn't even mention him, getting a hat trick, 30 goals on the year again for three straight years. Like, the pieces are here, so I don't think it needs to be a big sledgehammer. It's just the coach is important, and we know it's not going to be Martin. So the next coach is this is going to be the most important head coach hiring in Senators history, in my opinion, because there's so much promise with this team. But as we've seen, you know, like, they're getting older, and, you know, Brady, I think, is 24. He's turning 25 in September. Like, these guys are, or he might be turning 24 or something like that. But these guys are kind of exiting that stage of being young players, right? So at some point, something needs to change. And I do think it starts with goaltending. So I don't know what they're going to do there, but that's where I would start, because you could just tell a deflating goal for a young team is going to, you know, cripple them. And I think they've shown signs this year of being able to push through that. Like, today, again, the Islanders, this is a perfect example of their season. I think they, Korpisalo lets in a really weak one at the end of the second, and they come back and they win this one in overtime. Like, that's an impressive win. They've done that a couple times under Martin. So we'll see where it goes. That's a bit of a long-winded answer, but I'm more optimistic now, I think, even after that long losing streak.
I definitely think the Islanders game is a better indication than the Pittsburgh and the Columbus one, simply because Pittsburgh's just been absolutely snake bitten on the power play, and just even strength goals of any variety over the past, like, five or six games. They just can't buy one. And Columbus can't hold a lead to save their lives. So I think, you know, for a team, you know, fighting for a wild card spot right now and on the heater that the Islanders have been, and, you know, the Islanders tie in the final minute to force overtime and get a valuable point, for Ottawa to just stick with it and then, you know, with a power play to end overtime, you know, Pinto making a good pass to Brady Tkachuk for the hat trick, you know, just again speaks for itself. To confirm, in mid-September, Brady Tkachuk will be 25.
That's what I mean. Like, him and Shabbat, too, you know, like, Shabbat's,
yep,
you know, for all intents and purposes, and based on what we see for athletes, not even just NHL players, like, Shabbat is either just entering or exiting his prime right now. Like, you could argue that he's exiting his prime, which is insane to think about. I don't know, man. I mean, I agree with what you said, though. Like, playing these teams that are in these big playoff pushes, like the Islanders are, as a fan, you're kind of sick of it because they've been doing it for years where they play the spoiler down the stretch. But with a new coach and new management instilled, I think it's a different tone. Like, this summer is going to be a different tone than the last few, in my opinion.
I just remember in mid-December, Ottawa went on a 5-game slide that ultimately cost DJ Smith his job, and they took home 0 of a possible 10 points. Despite playing better against Arizona, they had a 3-0 lead and they blew it in Martinez's return to Ottawa. And then they go to Colorado. They have a 4-2 lead against the Avs, and they lose 6-4 because Nathan MacKinnon just turned into God mode, as he's been all year. And then after that 5-game slide, they started to get their game back, and then they go on a 5-game road trip to start off the new year. Once again, get 0 out of a possible 10 points, get smoked out west. And then at the same time, they bounce back. And then they suffer losses to Anaheim and Chicago, two cellar dwellers. And then they bounce back with 7 of 8 against Tampa, Florida, Dallas, and Vegas, Tampa and Florida being a road back-to-back. And then they go on a 7-game slide, and they lose to Anaheim and San Jose in that stretch. Like, they're just a tough team to grade. And when I look at the Ottawa Senators, I think team structure, when we're talking about head coaches, and we'll talk about head coaches to close out this discussion that we're going to have later on. I think structure is number one, above special teams, because you can get away with bad special teams, a bad power play or a bad penalty kill, or, you know, your goaltender just isn't doing it for whatever reason on that particular night. If you have good structure, like a team like the Carolina Hurricanes does, you can get away with stuff like that in the long run if you have good structure. And I point to Philip Gustavson after the Sens traded him for Cam Talbot and the season he had, not this year, but the one before. And then Cam Talbot goes to the Los Angeles Kings on a 1-year, why the heck not deal. And he resurrects his career again. So it's just like, if those two guys, after leaving Ottawa, can have a great season, why does it keep happening where Ottawa just can't get the saves? Is it the goaltending can't provide the save, or the team's not playing well enough in front of them to give them a fighting chance? I feel like it's a bit of both there.
Well, that's the thing. So with the argument under when DJ Smith was there was absolutely like, you couldn't even argue the opposite, where their structure like was not goalie friendly. And by that, I mean, they gave up high danger chances all over the place. They weren't committed in I described it because I got into football and I don't know anything about football.
Yeah. Same.
I never played it, I should say. I kind of know a little bit, but it felt like when they made the coaching switch, they went from playing zone coverage to man coverage in the defensive zone.
Mm.
And it just felt like under DJ, they were just kind of being passive, and it was on purpose because they wanted to just let them shoot and see what happens. And, you know, that can work sometimes when you have a lead maybe, but I don't know. Like, it just didn't work. But now under Martin, they are more committed than ever. Like, that – I love the graphic on TSN saying the 0 shots in X amount of time. I think they've used that every single game. So it's not, you know, you can look at the end shot total that a team gives up. I think the Islanders still had like over 30 today.
They didn't get a single shot against Nashville in the third period. And believe it or not, that hadn't happened in team history before.
Right, right. So yeah, offensively, that's a whole other discussion. But defensively for the Sens, I'm saying with the goaltending, they've had stretches in most of their games under Martin where they hold their opponent to absolutely no shots.
Yeah, true.
When you do that, that then you can have more of a focus on goaltending. And I'd argue that since all, like the team to me, and I've caught glimpses of them recently. I admittedly have not watched. I got to be honest, I didn't watch a single game after Josh Norris got hurt. Like that entire losing streak.
I don't blame you.
I didn't. That was deflating. Well, I mean, they were all West Coast games. Like I just I didn't stay up and watch. And but there are even some where they're on a slide, and I just didn't really feel like tuning in because they just weren't playing well. But in those games, like they're low scoring, right? And there were a couple where Corpusalo and Forsberg play well. They make some saves and whatever. But you know, you look at the end shot total. It's in the 30s sometimes against. I think that once, and I think the idea of keeping Martin here is to work out those kinks.
Yeah.
This is a goalie friendly structure that they're going to play and assuming that they're going to keep next season with whoever the coach is, right? So that is when you point the finger more at goaltending. And I think, again, like the second Islanders goal today was just one that cannot go in on an NHL goaltender. And that's the deflating goals I'm talking about, you know, where you're a young team and you see that go in night after night after night. You just get this desperation that you can't give up a shot, which leads to more mistakes. And, you know, so I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is about goalies. And I would imagine they bring someone in new next season. I don't know if they'll like it'd be hard for me to convince me that they're going to move on from both Forsberg and Corpusalo. Like I think the path, if they're not going to buy out Corpusalo, and I'm getting ahead of myself here, but if they're not going to buy out Corpusalo, then I think they'll move on from Forsberg somehow. He has 1 year left.
Yeah. I think Forsberg's more likely for that reason. Like Corpusalo is 4 years. You can't give up on him this soon.
Yeah. And I mean, look, like his body of work this season warrants being released. Like, let's be honest. He's not been good. He has not been good enough.
Yeah.
Contract aside, he just hasn't been good enough as a goalie. So I can see them bringing in another guy to play other than Forsberg and just maybe mixing it up a little bit at the start of the year anyway. And you're also going to be at a point next year where Sogard and Marilainen are going to be pushing for spots, and Sogard especially. I think if he can have a good camp and kind of force his way in there, you know, I'm thinking of, I mentioned Edmonton earlier, like you look at Stuart Skinner and Jack Campbell, right? Campbell and Corpusalo have similar contracts. Campbell's making more money, but you know, similar deals where they're mid to long term and eat up a good chunk of cap for a goalie, and they just were not good enough. So what do? You bring in a rookie goaltender in Stuart Skinner. He's inconsistent here and there, but again, Edmonton's a good enough team where he can get away with it. And now he's playing lights out. He's been lights out since the coaching change. So I think that's something I can see where you need Sogard or Marilainen to step up and be, you know, this is the time for them to do it, I think. And, you know, goalies are getting younger and younger in the NHL. You don't need to take as much time with them. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they do. But yeah, I'd be surprised if they move on from Corpusalo. What about you?
I think it's too soon after 1 year. And like we've seen games where Corpusalo has been the reason why the Sens have gotten 2 points. And we've seen it in some of Ottawa's best stretches as well. I just think the availability of Forsberg, it just hasn't been like it was the year he basically chased Matt Murray out of Canada's capital. We haven't seen that Anton Forsberg. So I think with a year left, it's easier to move on from that than a guy with 4 years left. And in my opinion, can easily bounce back if, you know, the system is right. And like you said, when we talk about coaches and who the next hire is going to be towards the end of this podcast, it's definitely going to be a huge discussion. Now, switching over to forwards, because the reason why Ottawa couldn't beat Anaheim and San Jose on that road trip is because they only scored a combined 2 goals. And when we're talking about goal scoring, Vladimir Tarasenko coming in on a 1 year deal at $5 million with a no trade clause on top of that, he got 17 goals, 41 points, 116 shots on target, 8 power points, 2 of them which were power play goals, 4 game winning tallies, 32 years old, 1602 per game in 57 games with the Sens. That's not terrible. But I think a lot of people were expecting a better return than what Ottawa got. And to refresh everyone's memory, he got, with Ottawa retaining 50% of his cap hit, he went to Florida. Ottawa got a conditional 4th in 2024, which could upgrade to a 3rd in 2026, provided the Florida Panthers win the Stanley Cup this season. They also get a 3rd round pick in 2025. 32 years old, previously battling shoulder issues, issues that required surgery. And when asked about going to Florida, he said it was basically the only spot he was willing to go to. So that basically cements the belief that Steve Staios's hands were tied and that Pierre Dorion's mess, once again, biting Ottawa in the butt. Your thoughts on the return that Ottawa got and how underwhelming it was or wasn't?
Look, I mean, like overall, you look at his body of work this season, it was fantastic to me. Like, he played the role he was brought in to play. And the team just couldn't compete. Like, we're looking at one of the best signings of last summer, really, when you look at everyone who was signed to deals. Like, to me, he was one of, if not the best around the league, which is nothing to scoff at. Like, that's mm-hmm. a pretty big deal. It's not often you hit on a free agent signing. Now, return wise, it's kind of a situation where you got to assume that they tried to extend him, and I think they did, or like maybe even just tried to talk to him, but clearly that wasn't going to happen. What's interesting about Tarasenko is, like, he had a lot of agent drama, and I think what might have happened from, you know, piecing together reports here and there, whatever it is, I'm going back to last summer, actually, after we recorded our the first time, LZ, when, you know, I think he had a multi-year offer on the deal from Ottawa, which he probably used to leverage with a team that he wanted to go to, while keeping Ottawa in the back of his mind. Which
I think it was down to Ottawa and Carolina, if I remember correct, and Ottawa won the war in that
right.
Regard.
So I think Carolina was like dead set on a 1-year deal or something like that. Ottawa offered term, and then they didn't take it. So something like that. He ended up firing his agents. So, you know, he's a motivated player coming in. He needs to prove that he's worth a long-term deal, and I'm sure he's going to do that in spades with Florida in the playoffs. It's going to be a machine. But yeah, I think overall, like, it's either let him walk or you get that. And honestly, getting two assets for a guy who was going to walk anyway, it's like I understand people are disappointed, but you got to take what you can get. And Staios was pretty clear that this is the only spot he would go. And you said that Tarasenko said it too. Like, there wasn't much they could do. And you know what? Honestly, yeah, they're mid-round picks, but then you make a move. We talked about Jameson Rees. Like, you make a move for him with a 6th-round pick this year, you're more comfortable doing that because you have two extra picks in your back pocket now. I don't know. I mean, you don't plan on, and obviously the management team was different, but let's take a look at it from Michael Andlauer's perspective, because he was the owner, not officially, but he knew it was going to be his team. You see that kind of signing for Tarasenko, and you got to assume he was at least somewhat in the loop, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it worked out. Like, that's he did what he was supposed to do when he came in. So kind of where I sit with it. Like, I'm at peace with it. It sucks, but I'll take the draft picks at this point if he was going to leave anyway, because this is not a playoff team. So it doesn't matter. Like, if they were in Detroit or Buffalo situation, right, and then they traded him, then it would be like, okay, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
But clearly they are not in a playoff push. So I'm okay with it.
The thing that I can kind of understand people in terms of people's gripes about the Tarasenko thing is because it kind of put them in a cap bind where they might have had to trade Matthew Joseph for pennies on the dollar, and then there was the Shane Pinto stuff that kept him out for the first half of the season. And it was just the salary cap bind that Dorion kind of handcuffed the Sens into with that contract. So I think that's why, you know, some fans have a bitter taste in their mouth about it. But, you know, again, Ottawa's hands were tied. And in my opinion, this wasn't even the trade where Steve Staios was going to put his stamp on the franchise. And that's a little bit down the line. And I think it looks better in hindsight when you consider what did go for a first round pick, because this was done days before the deadline. And then when all the moves were getting made, here were the moves that ended up landing first round picks. Okay. No strings attached first in 2025, and a former late first-round pick, that being David Edstrom, going from Vegas to San Jose. But that's because the Golden Knights take on a retained Thomas Hertl for the next 6.5 years. Like, yeah, sure, we'll give you a first-round pick. We don't care if it's first overall. We got Thomas Hertl for 6.5 years. Pittsburgh for Jake Guentzel, going to Carolina. They only get a first if Carolina reaches the Stanley Cup Finals this year. Otherwise, it's a second-round pick. Calgary gets a conditional first from Vegas in the Noah Hanifin trade that's now transferred to 2026 because Vegas ended up transferring that first in 2025 to San Jose for, as I mentioned earlier, Thomas Hertl. And the Flames even retained 50% and involved a third-party broker to retain another 25% in that deal. So even then, they didn't really get, you know, a firm set-in-stone first-round pick. Anaheim gets a first-round pick from the Edmonton Oilers after retaining 50% on both Adam Henrique and Sam Carrick. Philadelphia acquires a first from Colorado, but they traded, on top of trading Sean Walker, but they also took on Ryan Johansson's cap hit, which is now in the minors. So, yeah, you take on a bad contract from another team, and you trade away one of your best defensemen. Of course, you should expect a first-round pick. Montreal got a first for Sean Monahan. His cap hit was under $2 million. And then Calgary gets, like, five assets for Elias Lindholm, and one of them was a first-round pick from the Vancouver Canucks. But a lot of those picks are probably going to be late first-round selections that good teams are willing to part with. Heck, Tyler Toffoli, who was near 30 goals when he was traded, he went for, like, a second and a third or a second and a fourth. It wasn't a first.
So I did want to say, like, these are – as you're listing all this, I'm realizing, like, yeah, this was definitely a buyer's market this year, whereas last year I think was a seller's market.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Sens found themselves on the opposite side of both of those, which is awesome. But I think when you mentioned the Monahan and Lindholm deals, I forgot about those. When those happened, I'm like, okay, here we go again. Everyone's going to sell first-round picks. Not that those two guys aren't worth it, but like last year, the deadline didn't even have any trades because everyone made them in the days and weeks ahead.
Yeah.
So I thought it was going to be the same thing, but it's really interesting how the market just cooled off after those two, because I hadn't even realized, but yeah, it was about a month after, a few weeks after. And the there weren't any home run sells for anyone really. It doesn't seem like anyone got a haul back for any of their guys. Like, everyone's talking about the buyers, which to me is why the playoffs, I think, are going to be so exciting this year. I'm really looking forward to it.
I think because everything was so stacked, especially in the Eastern Conference, the buyer GMs are just going to be like, kill the clock, lower the price, and then strike. And I think all of them had the same idea, and that translated to what happened here. Like, it's not like a couple of years ago where Kyle Dubas trades a first round pick for Nick Foligno.
No,
I think that's probably why some GMs are hesitant but with trading their first round picks. My concern, however, is Josh Norris and his shoulder that has caused him a lot of problems over the past couple of years. Perceived to be a power play trigger man. Worst case scenario, he can center the second line. He's got a cap hit of $7.95 million for another 6 years, a 10-team no-trade list, but that won't kick in until the end of the 2025-26 campaign. And for the next 2 years, though, his future is something Ottawa, in my opinion, should ponder, because he's undergone a third surgery on his left shoulder. He wasn't game day ready at the start of training camp, barely seeing any ice time months before that because of a shoulder surgery. The second straight year that Norris's season has been cut short due to a shoulder surgery. And I don't by any means want to give up on him, but Ottawa's front office needs to at least have a debate on this, because as of right now, if the Sens want to trade him, they could move him anywhere, as the bulk of his salary will be paid over the next 3 years. It's at $9.5 million, then it drops to $8.75 million, then it's $7.85 million, and then its final year it shrinks to $7 million. So there's that avenue. You mentioned being hesitant about throwing the buyout word around, and it's going to be a lengthy one if they go down that route, 12 years. But financially speaking, it's not as bad as you would think, because Ottawa saves $102,000 in the first 3 years. They're responsible for $647,000 in year four, and then it goes up to $1.547 million in year five. The biggest crunch is in year six, when it climbs to $2.397 million. And then the final 6 years of the buyout, Ottawa would only pay $1.447 million against the cap. When will you compare that to, I don't know, a Ryan Suter or a Zach Parise, where Minnesota is basically losing prime years of Kirill Kaprizov based on those two buyouts? It's certainly at least manageable. So where should Ottawa proceed with Josh Norris, given all of that?
Man, it sucks. It really does. Like, I think it's important to understand, like, the timelines, right? And I like that you went back to last year and mentioned how he missed training camp. Like, the start, he wasn't ready to go to begin the year. And you think about it, he had surgery in January of 2023. That was when he re-injured it again that season. And that's when he had the surgery, I believe. So you think about how, like, it's still, I guess, what, a month and a half later this time than it was? like what reason do we have to believe that he'll even be ready to go in training camp, right? No. So that's one thing. So if you're planning on keeping him, buyout's not an option, trade isn't an option. If that's what the management team is thinking, then you got to start really asking questions then about when he's going to be ready, because I know they're hopeful for the beginning of training camp, but there's so many angles of this that just are talking points, right? It's fascinating in all the wrong ways, because you think about him himself, like he is 24 years old, I think 23 years old. And it's devastating. And he's had three shoulder surgeries before he's 25 years old. Like, that's not good for anyone. And let alone a hockey player. Like, you could tell that, I think part of his early season, you know, as I was watching him, like, he was getting used to being physical again and doing all this stuff, like being all right in the corners, like that's going to take an adjustment. But you think of all the work he did to get back, and it happens again. Like, there, he's going to have to go through that entire process again of getting comfortable and getting more reps in and all this. Like, it's a long shot, I think, at this point to expect him to be the producer that we thought he would be. And it would be a remarkable turnaround for him, but, and a story, but like, man, it's almost unfathomable, right? Like, that it's the exact same injury or whatever it is. A shoulder surgery is a shoulder surgery.
Oh, it's the same shoulder. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and who knows, you know, they're very vague about it, which I guess I understand, cause it is medical stuff. But at this point, like, I understand it's a completely new regime this time around. You know, they all took over when he was just recovering and just coming back, but, it's honestly, it's hard to kind of talk about too, because it's a guy, like, he's part of the core, like, he's part of the fun group. And, you know, I'm thinking of that Canadian division season. Like, it was fun watching him in his rookie year just kind of figure things out and, you know, turn into that goal scorer he was when he only played 60 games. He had 35 goals, just a great scoring pace.
Boatload of power play goals too, like, huge part of their power play.
And look at that. Like, I mean, look, when he's not feeling his best, and clearly he wasn't this year too, because he wasn't taking one-timers. When he's not feeling his best like that, that power play struggles. And look what's happened this year. It's really struggled. Yeah. I think it's been better lately, but they don't have that trigger man. And I think last year it got masked because DeBrincat was there, and DeBrincat was a fantastic power play addition. But when he's gone, and then when Norris is hurt and not playing 100% of the power play, it falls off a cliff. Like, they were one of the best power plays in the NHL when he was clicking. So it is unfortunate. And, you know, you talked about goal scorers, like, Tarasenko's gone, Norris is gone. And then look what happens as soon as Norris is gone. That team, they struggled to score in that 7-game losing streak. Like, that was kind of the main point I took from that, all those losses, was they couldn't score enough goals. It was the opposite of the other problems we were seeing. So it's really unfortunate, because, yeah, you could talk about trading Josh Norris, and if there's a dance partner, there could be a path to it. But even then, like, I love what Shane Pinto's done this year. He's looked fantastic since coming back. Greg has been really good too, and just another year of growth for those guys wouldn't be the worst thing. But again, you're still losing an element in Norris that you can't really replace internally, I think, because I think when he's at his best, he's a pretty good two-way centerman, but it's more important that he's a goal scorer. And the team, as skilled as they are, don't have any pure goal scorers, right? Like, there aren't any on that roster. A lot of guys can put the puck in the net. Like, Kachuk gets 30 a year. Stutzla, if he can bury it, like, that's another thing though. Like, he's struggling to score, and, you know, he's having that kind of season and he's playing fantastic, but just can't score a goal. But you take out that element, there aren't many bona fide goal scorers on the team. I'd say everyone's a playmaker other than Norris, and he's not there anymore.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like you're Connor McDavid and you're just like, oh, you went goalless in 8 games, but you got 19 assists. So who cares? Like, not too many players can produce at that rate, like only like a handful. So,
right.
Unless you're Connor McDavid, you can't really get away with not scoring goals. But yeah, needless to say, wishing all the best to Josh Norris. Hopefully he's back on the ice soon, and just hopefully gets his career back on track, and, you know, can just feel like himself again. That's the bottom line.
That is the biggest. And I'm not going to lie, LZ, like, I'll see what you think here too, but
no.
do you think that losing streak, because he got injured in that first loss, I believe Nashville was that first loss, of the losing streak. That's when he got hurt, or it was the second one.
Washington came first, and then it was Nashville.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, right. And it was a quick back-to-back, so yeah, they were, yeah, like, and then they didn't win a game, right, for weeks. And I think that his injury just devastated that team.
Yeah.
I think that's what
game
happened
in particular. Like,
That's when they had no shots in the third, when they probably realized he's not coming back. That was a dejected team. And you can't blame them. Like, it's devastating. It's devastating.
That game, in my opinion, like, it was going to take a Hamburglar run and a half just to get into the playoffs as a wild card team. But I thought Ottawa had an outside chance to maybe do something and turn their season around. And looking at how Detroit's struggled and how the Islanders struggled before that, the door potentially was open for Ottawa to do something. The second they lost that game, the second Josh Norris went down with that injury, I thought they're done. Like, spiritually, they're done. Like, yeah, they can work hard. They can claw their way back. They can win out. I don't think it happens this year after that game.
And look, like, I understand it. And in a nutshell, like, it had to be heartbreaking for them. And,
yeah.
Like, they're all close. They've been playing together for years, and they just keep seeing this guy go down with that shoulder. I can imagine what happened behind closed doors, and it's tough, but at the same time, like, and I'm sure I glanced at the questions before, so I'm sure we might hit on it with the next coach, but that's something, you know, emotional swings, like, that's something that
Jacques Martin has mentioned it many times in the post game, many times.
And you could talk about season management, because this team just goes on these absolute losing streaks and can't find their way out of it.
And that's how good teams win, is they avoid those.
They rally around stuff like that, where you can't criticize them for feeling that way, and I do too, but
yeah.
They just need a coach who, and I'm not blaming Martin here, because he is an interim basis, but I'm, you know, 7-game losing streak, everyone's taking blame, and the coaching staff needs to as well, right? For not being able, like, everyone wears the loss. So that's kind of what I mean. Like, yeah, Martin's been great and everything, but you need a coach who can stop the bleeding, because their record has been worse this year under Martin. And that's saying something, I believe it has been. I knew it was before they got hot in February, but I'm imagining that them getting hot in February was canceled out by that stinker of a road trip. So I'm guessing that they're still worse winning percentage-wise under Martin than they have been under DJ. So, I mean, that alone is like, okay, the process, will respect it, but the results are worse. So they need to figure out how to turn that around.
I mean, look at the Nashville Predators and the trip to the Sphere in Las Vegas. Everyone keeps talking about, oh, we're going to see you two, and now we're not, because we didn't show up for our home game against Dallas. We got spanked, and now ownership and management is pissed, and we're not going. Oh, wait, they're in a playoff spot now because they forgot how to lose. Okay, fantastic. See, Andrew Brunette and Barry Trotz got that team going again, and you look at Rod Brind'Amour when the Hurricanes couldn't buy a save in the first half, and now they're the Carolina Hurricanes again, and they're going for it. They have Jake Gensel. They have Evgeny Kuznetsov. The coaches, the motivators, the masters of that – they're able to get the best out of whatever guys are on their roster. Speaking of guys on the roster, and maybe Josh Norris can take solace in the fact that Shane Pinto, after his injury troubles, has really bounced back after missing the first half of the season due to other issues. But in his first 22 games, 6 goals, 18 points, plus 9 rating, 2 power play tallies, 71 shots, and averaging 17.53 in all situations. Can this Shane Pinto be the regular Shane Pinto for a full 82-game season, in your opinion, Jack?
That's the thing. I think that's the thing we all need to ask ourselves. And that is, honestly, I think that's the most important question when you discuss Josh Norris is, okay, what can we – if they were to lose him, and honestly, if they decide to keep him, but he's also not ready to go by the beginning of the season, like, is Shane Pinto the guy now? And I think so. I think that you know, he talked a lot about when he came back. He talked a lot about his, you know, becoming a pro and stuff like that. And I think part of being a pro, and it's like this cliche thing everyone says, right? Like, oh, this guy's a great professional, and they say a lot about a lot of veterans and everything, right? And what I've learned is that doesn't mean that they know how to treat people, and they know how to do, they take care of their body, right? And I think what we've noticed, and I think Jake Sanderson had similar issues, and you can see it with a lot of NCAA players, is college is a fantastic way to work your way up. You're playing against men. You're always around hockey. Like, it's a great development path. But what it doesn't have that the NHL and the Canadian Hockey League offer is that every night grind kind of atmosphere. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when Pinto came and he played his first, you know, he missed that full season. So really his rookie season was last year. He played 82 games and he started so hot. He was so good at the beginning and he tapered off. And I think that that is a result of just being a college player and not being used to the everyday grind,
mm-hmm.
And getting that consistency and everything. I do think that Pinto benefited, I think, just from that suspension in a weird way. He got time to realize like, okay, you got to treat your body well. 24/7, 365 days a year to be an elite athlete. And I'm not saying that he wasn't in shape or anything like that. I think that that's always a learning curve for every player coming out of college. I think even Brady Tkachuk in his rookie season, you can see there were growing pains, just mm-hmm. the grind of a day-to-day, you know, NHL schedule. And I will say too, though, I think Pinto under Jacques Martin is a much better player, because
yeah.
that has to be said too, because under DJ, you know, he's not really a checking player. Like, he's not going to hit guys. Like, he, and I just don't think his style fit DJ well. So that's part of it too. Like, he's a detailed kind of player. He's the kind of player, I always say this, like him and Sanderson, ironically, both from North Dakota, but they're both very good players. I always say, like, if I had a kid and I was teaching them how to play hockey, I'd say, watch Jake Sanderson and Shane Pinto, the details in their game. Cause every time when I was younger, yeah, you'd have coaches when you were really young, just be like, you know, on Saturday night when you sit down and watch what Sidney Crosby does here and like little things. And as you get older, they point out, you know, more niche players, I guess you could say, or like not the main superstars. You're like, hey, why don't you sit down and watch Shane Pinto for a night and just try and play like that, because they're so detailed and they're so good with their sticks and their positioning and everything. So that's my favorite part of Pinto's game. I think as he gets older, he'll just keep getting better. Like, I don't think this is a ceiling by any means.
Now, you mentioned defensemen. Let's talk about defensemen and Ottawa's defensive depth. And we've talked about Eric Brännström multiple times and Lassie Thompson here and there, Jacob Bernard Docker. But you also have guys like Hoyt Stanley and Tyler Cleven, who have a lot of hype. Jorian Donovan as well, who's playing in the OHL, having a good year over there. And it all links back to Jacob Chychrun. And the final year on his contract is next season, $4.6 million. He can test the free agency market in July of 2025. He can sign an extension, if he so chooses, as early as Canada Day this year, 2024. Or the Sens can trade him elsewhere. And I was interested to hear Steve Staios' comments about, you know, how subjects were being punted into the summer and they were kind of testing the waters on certain areas and maybe just like seeing what the market is, who's interested in who, just to see what they were at so that, you know, when the season is done, they can kind of circle back to that. And I'm curious how much of those discussions were about Jacob Chychrun and his future. And I think it's easy to see why the Sens played the waiting game here. Prior to the coaching change, he was killing it offensively. And he still had a good season, but 9 goals and 31 points in 63 games. Overall, that's like half a point a game. Minus 17 rating on the year in his first 63 games. In that span, 159 shots, 12 power play points, and averaging 22.39 per game in all situations. So my question is, should Ottawa have pulled the trigger on a Jacob Chychrun deal when he was probably the best defenseman on the market, or are they right to take it slow here?
I don't know. This is another tough one. So, like, I like how I said earlier that there aren't that many issues with this team, and then you keep bringing up all these positions, and I'm like, my God, this is a headache.
We're not Columbus.
No.
They're worse teams.
Maybe that's the thing I'm doing in hindsight, right? In retrospective, other teams are in a worse spot, but yeah. There's still a lot of question marks. Yeah. Like, there's a question mark at every position. So
question marks in year 7 of, you know, yeah. a rebuild that should theoretically be done by now.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that's another, a whole other discussion, I feel like, but, look, I think they should have waited, no question, because yeah. there's no way that, especially with the way the market was, we were talking about it being a buyer's market, there's no way they would have gotten good value for Chychrun, or, you know, not that you need to get exactly what you gave up, but they would not have gotten equal value. I don't think that's even a question. And what I think is interesting is I'm looking at a team like the Boston Bruins, okay? And
yep.
There was rumors that Ullmark waived his no trade or didn't waive his no trade for an unknown team. And I think people were saying it's Los Angeles, but there was another nugget from Friedman saying there was another team that no one knows kind of poking around. And I have to think that Ottawa inquired about Ullmark, and Chychrun was probably part of that package going back, because that money kind of makes sense. The Sens would have to move other things around, though, because Ullmark makes a bit more, I think, than Chychrun.
Yeah, a little bit, but still more, yeah.
They could move some things. Like, it wouldn't have been a one-for-one swap, I don't think. It would have been Chychrun and probably a pick, I'd imagine, going back for Ullmark at a pick swap or something. But that's kind of – I think that's what – and listen, like, when that report came out, there were 31 other fan bases wondering if it was their team doing it. So
yeah.
There's a lot of teams, like, that need goaltending, like I mentioned, and – I'm sure they were all like, oh, it was our team for sure. It was Edmonton. It was New Jersey. Like,
yeah,
everyone was saying that. But I think there's reason to believe it was the Sens. Like, I don't know. I don't think that would be a crazy, thing for him to inquire about, because he said they were discussing stuff, right, all day, and they'll punt to the summer. And I think Ullmark is something that will be punted to the summer too.
So, And you can have this debate in the summer because, you know, the guys who are on the trade bait board are going to be free agents.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't really answer the Chychrun thing. My bad. I got sidetracked.
We'll circle back to it, because we're technically not done with the Chychrun thing, because we're going to play the game of, like, okay, would you extend Jacob Chychrun? Because you have an NHL veteran in his prime who can play both sides of the blue line, even though he's a left-handed shot. For whatever reason, right-handed shots are more valuable. So, like, at Erik Karlsson or Cale Makar, second you have him, don't let him go. Colorado definitely took that advice. We won't talk about what happened with Karlsson, but he's since been traded out of San Jose and is now in Pittsburgh. But the best free agent defenseman are Brandon Montour, who had a great season last year, but this year I don't think he even has 30 points at the moment of this recording. And then you have Noah Hanifin having a career year, but, you know, even then, he's probably like a 30 to 40 point defenseman average. And both are going to be getting paid this July probably. And the salary discount you have with Jacob Chychrun for another season is definitely significant, and something you wouldn't get with Hanifin entering free agency or Montour entering free agency. If you're the Sens, you can still get a pretty good return for Chychrun, even with a full year left on his contract. But let's say the Senators sit down with Jacob Chychrun leading up to the NHL draft at the Sphere in Las Vegas. His agent is Andy Scott, who works for Octagon Athlete Representation. He's helped clients like Mikko Rantanen and Patrick Laine, Leon Draisaitl in the past and in the next year or so. Mark Scheifele, Rasmus Ristolainen, all of those guys got big money deals with Andy Scott representing them. If you are Steve Staios, what do you think is the right amount of term and dollars to keep Jacob Chychrun on board, assuming you go down that route, and what is your cutoff?
It's a good, good question. First of all, I will just for the record say I think they should extend him. And I know there's a question of him or Shabbat, but I'm you know, that we I'll get into that after if we want to talk about Thomas Chabot.
Yeah, and as an alternative, if you keep Jacob Chychrun, do you deal Thomas Chabot? We'll just throw that question out there while we're at it.
Listen, like, I don't think you have to. That's the thing. Like, I don't know if you need to. Part of the appeal for me when you get Chychrun is you got Sanderson, Chabot, and Chychrun, and the fact that one of them could go down, because let's not forget, Jacob Chychrun was a Band-Aid for his pretty much the entirety of his career. He's played every game this season, so
yeah,
he's been durable, which is not something we're used to. And I know I pointed that out on Twitter the other day, and a lot of people kind of mentioned, like, oh, he's playing softer and whatever, and I don't know if I buy that. But, you know, playing, like we talked about, being a pro, taking care of your body, whatever, playing all 82 games is an absolute accomplishment. So if he can get there, that'd be awesome for him. And I think a testament to how he's kind of changed his training regimen and all of that, like, I would extend him just because you're worse if you take him off your blue line. And I know you can maybe plug a couple holes with other guys, but I would imagine if you're making that move, you're not addressing that in that same transaction. So you're talking other free agent signings, maybe. You're hoping the young guys like Klevin can step in. But I think if you move on from him, you're a worse blue line. And I don't really see a scenario where that would change. And also, I think you can get him cheaper than what Shabbat's making. I'm just trying to think of actual term and like money. It's a great question because you'd like to think it's around seven. I think that would be my thing. Like, let's say he wants 8 years. I think you can get him at like a, what did Chern? I think Chernak signed for something like that, didn't he, in Tampa?
Yeah, I'll you keep chatting. I'll double check that, but that sounds about right.
Like, I believe when Sergachev and Chernak signed on the same day, those weird 8 year extensions that Tampa handed out, I believe Chernak was like 8 times 6 point something. Like, that'd be perfect for Chychrun, but I could see him getting more and wanting more than that, to be honest. And I can also see him wanting to play out next season and just see if he can get more offense. Like, he might, you know, he might not want to rush into it, but yeah, I think that'll kind of tell us what the team is thinking, you know, what ends up happening with Jacob Chychrun.
So Chernak, sorry to interrupt, 8 by 5.2 for Chernak. And then you have Mikhail Sergachev, who's currently injured, but you know, a couple of great seasons since he signed that contract. Yeah. He signed also for an 8 year pact at $8.5 million per season.
Like, I think somewhere in the middle of that, right? Like somewhere in the 6 point, you know, high, upper six figures, maybe like 6.8 and per year, maybe on an 8 year deal. Like, I think if you're a Chychrun, you gotta like, that's a pretty good deal. It's a raise on what you're getting and you're here, you know, you get the security of an 8 year deal. Like that's a big deal as well because, of a guy who couldn't stay healthy really. Right. Like if the Sens came to him with that, I think he'd sign. The thing is though, like he's also a superstar. Like you got to remember that. And he might not be one here. Like he's not going to be the guy that's going to be Sanderson. It already is. But he's that kind of, he's an elite player and Steyo said it himself. Like I'd be calling too, because he's an elite player. That was his quote, but he might hold himself to a higher standard and maybe he does want a chance where he can be the guy back there. Like, I don't know. We don't know. There's all these factors that we got to consider that management will certainly have gotten to know already and will have to be aware of when they have the discussions, right? You got to, there's so many other sides of the trading guys that we don't even think about.
Yeah. I mean, I just look at Ottawa's right side. I love Artem Zub, but he's, in my opinion, the best pure right-handed shot defenseman this team has.
Yeah.
And
JBD? JBD, I find, has been pretty good this year.
He's been all right. Yeah. But I feel like they could do better. And I feel like they can't trot out the majority of the same roster. Like, they need to make some sort of significant change somewhere.
Well, yeah, and not to get sidetracked here with depth defensemen, because we could talk about that all day. But you know, you look at all these other teams, I just feel like they're, and I'm not usually this kind of person. I don't think size is all that important.
Yeah.
But they're bought, like, outside of those big three names on the, of the top four, outside of the top four, like, all along their depth chart, there's no size. Like, they're, like, JBD's been good. Gannett's been good when they're up, right? And JBD's played a lot of games this year, and he's been, I think, from what I've seen, he's been okay. They're just not big, though. They're not big. And you don't need to play menacing, but you look at every, like, we'll watch the playoffs and every team, I guarantee that bottom pair is a big pairing because you need to be able to throw them out against a top line, because it's not because you want them to hit the small skilled players. It's because the skilled players and the really good players in the playoffs are big and fast, right? Like McDavid, McKinnon, they're all horses. So you got to be able to contend with all that. I'm getting sidetracked again, but I think that's, I see what you mean, but you look at the difference in the way Artem Zub plays compared to the rest of those right shots. It's night and day, like you said.
The other thing that I wanted to address is kind of like that grit in the bottom six, and Ottawa definitely has pieces. Ridley Gregg, the Riddler, he knows the way. At the same time, though, I think they need more of that. I mean, you look at Florida with, you know, guys like most notably Nick Cousins, but you know, you just even go to the front of the net and you expect to get a shot just for being in the crease, like not even touching the goalie. You're just in the crease, like expect to get a shot, you know, to the back if you're going to come this way. And I feel like just those teams being able to just get inside your head mentally, like that, the playoffs is where they thrive in that environment. And I think to some extent, Ottawa needs to get a bit more of that too.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, because after that infamous slap shot from Ridley Gregg, I feel like he kind of toned it down after that. And I don't know about you, but I would hate if someone told him to tone that down, because I think you got to embrace it. Like, that's who that kid is. That's how he plays. And I agree, like, Florida's formula, if they have more success in the playoffs this year, is going to be replicated. And I would not hate if Steve Staios said, you know, let me take a piece of that pie and build around a Brady Tkachuk, right? When those rumors were circulating, Steve Staios said, we're trying to build this team around Brady Tkachuk. So I'm really curious, like, maybe they implement a little bit of that. Like, that's not far-fetched. I don't think it is that they could legitimately be trying to copy Florida's formula. Now, no moves have been made really that would point to that yet, I don't think, but it's just something to think about, because yeah, like, I agree. They need to show some more bite sometimes. And
Brady can't be the guy to always bring that bite. Like, he needs to put up points like his brother Matthew. And that's why guys like Nick Cousins are there for the Panthers, is to do that kind of pesty actions that Matthew Tkachuk no longer has to worry about every single play.
So that's what I mean. I mean, yeah, Greg is a rookie, so it'll take time. But I think a lot of players already hate him. I think he's getting hacked and whacked a lot more than he was. And that'll just build. Like, he plays – like, it's – when you're a pest, it takes years to kind of build reputations, because those when people know, like, oh, we're playing this guy, he's going to do something, they're looking out for it, and then it leads them drawing. Like, it's such a mental game, too, sometimes.
Yeah.
When, you know, so over the time, I think Greg, that's where his value is really going to shine. But other than him and Tkachuk, like, no one else on that team is really mixing it up. Like, Giroux, I think, runs his mouth a lot, and that's kind of what he's good at. Like, all those mic'd up videos of him way back when were so good. And like, he's a known, like, he's always talking when you look at him. And I sat ice level for a game, was lucky enough to early last season. So like right when he was just starting, and like, he's always talking, like, you can hear him when you sit that close. So, but other than that, like, he doesn't mix it up physically, you know? Like, they don't have any guys up front anyway. And even on the back end, really, who mix it up. And I think the fourth line might, but you need impactful players. That's what Florida does, right? They have a whole line, Nick Cousins, Sam Bennett, and Matthew Tkachuk, that are just absolute pests. So you almost need one more player who can do that, and you can form a line with Tkachuk and Greg.
Now, in terms of finding those pieces that Ottawa is missing, here's an idea that I wanted to throw out there. It might not be popular, but I'll do it anyway. The Ottawa Senators... unless they decide to forfeit it to the NHL because they have Pierre Dorian Sins to pay, thanks to the Evgeny Dadonov transaction with the Vegas Golden Knights. Ottawa, at some point, whether it's this year, 2025, or 2026, they'll have to forfeit a first-round pick to the NHL. And it's just going to get tossed into a void. It's going to nobody. It's just gone. I think given how this season is going, it's safe to say they're keeping this year's pick, especially considering how stacked a talent the top 20 is. And in 2025, it's supposed to be a better draft than 2024. That being said, should they, if you want to get better right away, would you consider using that pick as trade bait to get some of those missing pieces that you need? And at what point do you say, I don't care what I could get, I'm keeping the pick?
No. I think that's so far out of the question, because, and not to say I hate the idea. Like, I think it's fair to, like, you know, you want to see, what Staios does differently. Like, I don't know, but Dorion went big game hunting. And as much as it was fun as a fan, you're like, oh my God, we got Matt Duchene. Oh my God. Like, he did it. Like, what a move. It's so ballsy.
Alex DeBrincat, Jacob Chychrun, exactly. They all cost first round picks, and so, all of them were top 15 picks.
Exactly. Right. And then like that kind of stuff can derail rebuilds. And I'm not, like, you could point to other teams around the league. And obviously the obvious ones are Detroit and Buffalo. And in those times, like, their picks haven't really made an impact on their team yet. But when you've got internal options, I think it makes you less married to the current, like, iteration. And this is a huge, like, deep dive almost into their rebuild. But, you know, the Sens made those big trades, and then all those players got spots in the lineup, right? Like, it was Norris, Batherson, like, they were in there right away, and there was no internal competition after that. Like, these guys have been here for 5 years. So there could have been someone to come up if they had kept those picks, let's say, right? You know what I'm saying? There could have been a guy to push them out. And yeah, there's Ridley Gregg, there's Shane Pinto, but they just came here and they're just starting to push them out. But there's going to be no one after that coming because they don't have anyone coming from 2022 or 2023 that's a top caliber prospect as of right now. You know, so I think if they should not consider moving that, the first round pick, this one especially, because it'll be top 10 probably, but
It could even be first overall.
It could very well be.
Yeah, I'd certainly hope. I mean, we're due for a lottery win anyway.
They are.
Now, speaking of wins, Erik Karlsson gave a lot of wins to this team just by being Erik Karlsson. And there was this nugget that Sportsnet, Elliot Friedman has tossed into the winds that I want to get your take on. And just pondering the idea of an Erik Karlsson reunion with Ottawa as the Penguins start to regress and start to feel what NHL 500 hockey feels like. And Daniel Alfredsson back in the Sens organization. Erik turning 34 years old on May 31st. 3 seasons left on his 8-year deal. Signed way back with San Jose in 2019. And Erik Karlsson was asked by a member of the media about Friedman's thinkings and just simply responded, well, that's Canada for you. And you know what? He's 100% right. I'm sure you and I could talk about our fantasy hockey teams for an hour if we wanted to. But if Ottawa wants to pursue the opportunity to acquire Erik Karlsson, and it's something that Erik Karlsson also wants to pursue, should they do it?
Look, I'd love it. Like I, he was my favorite player growing up. Everyone loved Karlsson. And it was the breakup was awful. Like it really was. Honestly, it was drawn out. It was excruciating as a fan at that time, watching the team just crumble a year after being so close to a Stanley Cup final. It was brutal, but to see him come back would be amazing. And it would, but it would make absolutely no sense for this team right now.
Yep.
Like it would be the absolute last thing I'd consider, but we just mentioned Dorion and big name hunting. That is absolutely something he would do. I think he, I believe there was a report that they tried last summer or something like that. Like they talked about it or something like that. Yeah. Like they were talking to San Jose. Like I don't want to throw that out there, 'cause I don't know if that's actually true, but, There was more to it than just fans talking. And that's why, you know, people like the media scrum wouldn't be asking Karlsson about that if it was doing that with I don't know. Like I'm getting sidetracked just thinking about it though. It would be amazing. It really would. Like if he could play at a high level, here and just like the leadership dynamics would be interesting, man, like with Tkachuk and Karlsson and like Alfie coaching him. Like, I don't know how that would go. There would be a lot of headlines. I can really see that all just crumbling in our faces though.
Yep.
That's basically how things go. You know, we can't have nice things, but,
neither can the Leafs, to be honest, but yeah, especially Ottawa.
No, yeah. The Leafs definitely can't. yeah. So that's my long way of saying I would not, I would absolutely not do it, but I would love it if they did. I'd find a way to love it.
Yeah. 1-day contract, retire a Senator. He'll retire in Ottawa anyway.
Exactly.
He still loves the city. He still loves the people. His wife's from there. But at the same time, Erik Karlsson is not the same player he was 5 years ago, and the Sens aren't the same team as they were 5 years ago. And both sides have moved on. That's pretty much my thought on that. So before we wrap up our conversation, the promo for next season, as today's sellout crowds become more common, is short and simple in 2 words: forward together. And it's up to guys like Sens owner Michael Antlauer, the GM Steve Staios, Dave Poulin in the front office to build the proper foundation, to keep building the front office, to keep adding more pieces to their coaching staff. And they can't lose their players, mentally speaking, as they watch playoff hockey from their living room couches in a couple of weeks. And we talked about what the Sens need in a coach. Are there any specific coaches, or one in particular, that you think, if he's available, Ottawa must get him at all costs?
Oh, this one could take us a while.
Even just a brand of coach. Like, it doesn't have to be this guy, but someone like this guy.
I mean, so people keep throwing out Craig Berube. That's the name I see. And like, he won a cup. Like, don't get me wrong, great, great coach, turned things around, and it was hard on them, apparently. Like, he was good, disciplinary coach, whatever the Sens need. But I think DJ Smith coaches a lot like him. And that's like, I don't think that's far fetched. I think DJ has mentioned like that style or something like that. So that's kind of a red flag to me. You want a guy who's more like Jacques Martin, right? Where you keep this style. And I'd imagine that Martin's going to stay on the staff as he was before, like the eye in the sky kind of thing, like a coaching advisor or whatever it is, like almost like a president to a GM. Right. Yeah. So, which is an interesting dynamic, cause it's not very normal, but you'd imagine like he's going to have some say just in how things go. And I think it's hard to say really, because every coach is going to change where they go. But if Pittsburgh moves on from Mike Sullivan, I'd be all over Mike Sullivan, I think. He worked with Martin before, won two cups together, obviously, when Martin was his assistant.
True.
There is that connection. I remember Martin's first game was against Pittsburgh, or his first win was against Pittsburgh this season. And before that, Sullivan talked about him, and it was a pretty long clip about how much he respects him and yada, yada, yada. I'd imagine Pittsburgh moves on from him this summer, I think. And I think that will be a good partnership for the Sens. I think I could see that working out, because I like the way Sullivan coaches for the most part. But yeah, that's kind of what I was. What direction would you go in?
Rod Brendamore.
Whoa.
It might be a pipe dream, but I'm just saying he's on the final year of his contract.
That's true.
Carolina made a bunch of go for it moves. They got Jake Ensel. They got a flyer in Evgeny Kuznetsov. If they go out in the first round, I am very, very curious to see how loyal they are to their boy. If Ottawa gives him the Brinks truck, I think they might be able to sell him. I don't know how much he could do in Carolina if they don't win it all this year.
Well, I mean, now I'm just going to cheer so hard against Carolina to push that narrative.
I'm already cheering for their demise. Screw
it. That's a great point. I didn't even think about it like that.
Yeah, because why would he leave?
Yeah,
he's so loyal to that team. But
stayed quiet.
Alfie left for Detroit, so loyalty means nothing in this business, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the last contract he signed, it was also kind of like that situation, wasn't it? Like he signed at the last minute kind of thing, or like he let his contract expire, I believe, and they wouldn't pay him or something like that. And I
there was definitely a bit of hesitancy in the hockey world. Like it was around that Sebastian Aho time. Like, oh, the Canadians offer sheet Sebastian Aho. What's Carolina going to do? And it's like, chill, bro. We're matching it already, and we're going to take our sweet time, but we're matching it. And we're not letting our coach walk either. But that was 3 to 4 years ago, before Carolina had several chances to go the distance and they couldn't get it done. If they don't get it done this year, I definitely think there's at least a debate to be had if both sides or one of the two parts ways. So if that happens, though, a lot of teams are going to be wanting that guy.
Isn't this just classic, like, we forget about the teams kind of very south in the United States? Like,
yeah.
I forget about Carolina. Like the Florida teams get a lot of coverage now, I find, and a lot of talk because of their names and also what they've done. Like they massacred the Hurricanes last time. They just bullied them in those tight games, even, but they swept them, right? So like, I forget about Carolina, but yeah, like if that's a Canadian team, that's talked about every week. What's the coach going to do? You know, is the coach going to leave? Are they going to extend them? Like, should they extend them? Like that would be on every sports channel in the country, but because they're down in Carolina, like they don't get talked about that much. Everyone just looks at them as like, oh yeah, Carolina's always going to win their division. They're always consistent and whatever, but you flip the roles. It's interesting to think about it that way.
When you look at what the Carolina Hurricanes have been able to do with guys coming and going, like for example, the first year that Rod Brendamore was there, they didn't really have that much of an identity. And within a couple of months to, you know, almost a full year, they had the storm surge going, which Don Cherry and every single one of his relatives probably hated. They had, you know, a strong back check, a strong forecheck. They would eat you alive on the ice. and they became a fun team to watch again, and they went to the conference finals. And then there was that time where they decided, you know what, we're not going to pay Dougie Hamilton. In fact, we're going to bring in Tony D'Angelo. And everyone's like, what, you're crazy. You'll never let this down. And they kept winning, and they're still making deep playoff runs, you know, with mostly the same pieces. But the guys they decide not to keep around, they always find a way to produce winning teams despite whatever it is they're facing. And I think a lot of it is because Rod Brind'Amour is a good coach who adapts well, that keeps that identity intact, and guys want to play for him. And that's exactly what Ottawa needs right now.
So okay, now I'm going down a spiral, and it's we're sidetracking with Carolina Hurricanes talk here, but it's great.
Yeah.
The thing is, like maybe there is something to them going all in this year with finally going out and trading for big names at the deadline. Maybe there is something to that being Brind'Amour's last year in his contract. Like there, I'd imagine that there's been a couple of times where they've butted heads, Brind'Amour being like, we need goal scorer, we need help. Like maybe he's been pushing for it, more help at every deadline. They haven't given it to him. And now they're giving it to him being like, okay, here you go. Prove it.
Could
go
be.
Coach. Go be a Stanley Cup winning coach. And I think that like, I like that because it sets, you know, this is the Vegas, like Vegas is setting the tone for the league when it comes to how to run a front office and how ruthless you have to be. Went through three coaches in 6 years and they made they missed the playoffs once. Like they didn't tolerate any of that. Right. Like that's important to consider. Like I think
they traded a former Vezina winner for like a no-name prospect that I still can't to this day remember off the top of my head, and they won the cup a few years after that.
They gave Pacioretty away for free, and they, who else did they do it to? Leonard is, I guess he's still around, but
he's on LTIR. I think they signed Nate Schmidt, and within like a year or two after paying him, they trade him for like a third round pick or something.
Yeah. They didn't care about those misfits. I think they screwed over James Neal, I'm assuming. Like they, and I'm saying screwed over, like they within their reason, like it's a business at the end of the day, but I think they just got a reputation for being cutthroat, right?
And yeah. Eric Halla was probably the most cutthroat. It was his wedding day, or like just before his wedding day, he was called into the building. They had pretty much like disengaged his security pass. He had to ask security to let him in, and then he goes in to find out, oh yeah, you've been traded to Carolina or something.
Yeah, that's like a little, you know, it's over, like give or take here, but Vegas is just like the move they made, man. Like it's, I'm not even thrilled with what they did at this deadline. Like Hanifin's great. And I think Hurdle is a bit of a question mark though, but like, I don't think Stone's actually coming back, and they might miss the playoffs. Like, I don't know. It's pretty tight. And if they keep slipping, I don't know, man, but like they haven't been very good in 2024. So this is I think a wake up call. Like, look, they're so crazy, LZ. If they miss the playoffs, they might fire Bruce Cassidy.
Yeah. You know, and man, It would be interesting if he became available too, and that's why playing the waiting game to an extent might be Ottawa's best strength
and
there.
Guess who's from Ottawa? Guess who
Bruce Cassidy
as an Ottawa West Golden Knight at Barbara and Scott. Bruce Cassidy.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I don't. Well, if Cassidy and Brind'Amour are both on the market, then I don't know who we're gonna pick from.
Well, that just makes for an entertaining offseason, doesn't it?
Yes, sir.
Just a general trade deadline question while we're on the subject of trade deadlines. What are your thoughts on the one-for-one between Buffalo and Colorado? I wanted to get your take on this. Casey Middlestadt going to the Avs, Bowen Byram, a former fourth overall pick that Ottawa could have drafted,
going
to the Sabres.
I was going to point that out. I was going to introduce Byram by that. I like that you pointed that out. I haven't watched as much hockey this year as I did last year, so I haven't really seen Buffalo a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know Middlestadt was having this kind of season. To me, though, it feels like they just kind of got another Tyson Jost. You know, like they had him and they moved on from him. Like, I don't know anything about Middlestadt. I know he was really good in the World Juniors, but I think he was kind of struggling and he's having a breakout season. I don't know. I was listening to Spittin' Chicklets, and they said that he doesn't give that Nazem Kadri energy that they won the cup with, right?
Apparently, his price tag in the offseason was something that Buffalo wasn't willing to pay, and I think that's part of the reason why they moved on from Middlestad.
Right. Okay. So
because
he's
a pending restricted free agent after this year.
Okay. Yeah. Like I don't know. Like I mean, maybe he thinks like yeah, like for them to move on. But now I will say from Buffalo's perspective, that's it makes that pill easier to swallow. Like you're addressing one need. Or I don't even know if they needed it, but you just bolster what is already a really young and talented blue line with even more young talent, and it's working because they're on fire right now. I think they lost today, but. Byram's been awesome. I didn't know he had 11 goals this year. As of the day we're recording this, he had 11 goals. Like he's great. And yeah, like he could have been an Ottawa Senator. But I don't know. I mean, what did you think about it? Because I thought it made sense. Like it's great for Buffalo. Just why not make a swap? If you kind of, you know, Mittelstadt's 25 or whatever he is. Like I thought it was kind of a good move given like they I don't know. I guess, they needed to do something to move on from Mittelstadt if they weren't going to get anywhere with a contract.
I think both guys were in a position where they're talented people, but they're just not in the place where they can really excel to their full potential. Just because, you know, Buffalo has Jeff Skinner and Alex Tuch and Tage Thompson and, you know, J.J. Paterka is killing it. And Jack Quinn's going to be in that conversation too. You've got guys in their farm system that are also killing it. I think Jan Kulik is his name, who had a great World Juniors too. He's probably going to be in the Sabres movement in due time, and I'm probably even missing some other guys too. But Buffalo's loaded on offense. And what's interesting about Byram is that he's now behind, you know, in terms of just where he shoots from on the blue line. He's behind Owen Power and Rasmus Dahlin, who have been, you know, one has been really racking up points. The other had 30-plus points in his rookie season. So
and,
I'm really just interested.
Both just got monster extensions, too, right?
Exactly. Monster 8-year deal. So now it's just like, you know, Bowen Byram is a great defenseman. But, like, again, where does he fit on that blue line? Because we were asking the same questions in Colorado with, you know, Devon Toews, who just got paid, and Cale Makar, they already extended as well. Sam Girard was on the outside looking in. He's still on the team. So,
yeah. I mean, they have so many young guys. And, like, I mean, you just look over in Ottawa, it didn't really work, and it's not working as well as we thought it would anyway.
Yep.
But I still like having all three of them. So I can understand you know, why they would think it could work for them, because like, I don't think Power is better than Sanderson, but I think Dahlin's the best of the group. If you like send in Sabres defensemen, like it's, I don't know. I mean, they're pretty similar. You can compare it. Yeah. But I really like Byram. I like Byram a lot. He was really good when they won the cup. But for him, the move is awesome, right? Like you go from being stunted by Makar, and there's Dahlin and Power, but I feel like he's more on their level. He can be his potential, but Makar is like the best ever, so you're not gonna be able to pass him.
I'm gonna throw out one more hypothetical and then we'll call it a day. Once again, Jack Richardson, thanks so much for joining us. But one final thing: Leon Draisaitl is going to be eligible for a contract extension this offseason. He will have 1 year left on his deal, where after that he can test free agency if he chooses. Does he sign early, or do you think he hits the open market in 2025, no matter what the Oilers offer him?
Oh, this is a great, great last question.
I didn't even have it on my topic list, so I'm surprising you with this one.
I think you gotta assume he's gonna stay if they push for a cup. But if they bow out first round somehow, or lose in, I don't know, like, you know, not in good ways, I guess. Like,
if they go out in a whimper in the second round, like they get swept or whatever.
Yeah, or even if they get swept in the conference finals again, then you got to be like, okay, like we got to keep knocking on the door here, but at what point? And I'm not saying that the Oilers would not extend him. They obviously would. I think that he'll do a Nylander and play out the final year of his deal. I could see that happening. That seems to be the trend, like, especially, I mean, I'm not grouping them all together because of this, but they're all European, right? Like Nylander, Pastrnak did it, where you sign late into your UFA year, just make the team sweat a little bit and just have a stellar season. Like I actually think that's exactly what Draisaitl is going to do, because of the two of them, like it's unique that McDavid gets like has an extra year before his is expiring. Like I can see of the two of them, Draisaitl being the one to leave. I think McDavid's staying regardless, like the whole Messier-Gretzky thing. I know it's the reverse, but I can see McDavid staying because, like, it's like Crosby. You know, like those stars stay in one spot. It's an NHL tradition. So I would imagine McDavid is staying put.
Jack Richardson from the Everyday Sense podcast. Where can people find your hockey rants?
My hockey rants? Honestly, mostly just on Twitter these days. Yeah, just on Twitter, like kind of here and there. I've been mixing in some other stuff. Like I went to go see Dune. This is off topic with sports, but that movie was really good. So I threw some tweets out about that. But yeah, just on Twitter at Jack Richardson without an A in the Richardson. But yeah, that's where majority of the stuff is.
Thanks again, buddy. Appreciate you doing this and happy to have you on the show anytime.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. And looking forward to the next time.
That concludes this special edition of the Lace Them Up podcast. I'm Steve Ellsworth, bringing you up to speed on the latest Ottawa Senators hockey news. I have some ideas simmering in the oven over the next couple of months, so be sure to stay tuned for that if you're a member of Sens Army. Hope you enjoyed today's show, and go Sens go. We'll talk again soon.